I need to know everything. Who and the what and the where. I need everything.
Hello and welcome to JK Plus One. I am not your host, PTF. We filmed some videos this morning. He kept talking about is how his nose was running. Come on, dude. It's almost derby. We got to get yourself in order. Get you some Mucinex or some Claritin or, you know, some Kleenex or some. I don't figure it out, buddy. We got a lot of stuff to do here. I am your host, Jonathan Kinchin, and was moving the last couple of weeks, packing and moving. The two worst things that you can do in the history of the world. I would argue that packing and moving is actually worse than losing the last leg of a pick six when you're alive for a five-digit score. Okay, probably not as bad as that, but it's damn close. I'm excited for this next guest. I'm excited for him personally. I'm excited for him professionally as well. But before we get to that, I want to thank our friends at Qatar Racing and rooting for them as well with Just a Touch in the Kentucky Derby. And although our guest is involved with another Derby horse, I think our friends at Qatar have a special place in their heart for our guest as well. He has won a Breeders' Cup race for them. So it's all love around here, but wish our friends at Qatar Racing. I think Just a Touch is extremely live. I've gone out on a limb and said that I think that three horses can win this race. I think Fierceness can win this race. I think Just a Touch can win this race. And this is a great transition to our guest, Tyler Gaffalione in Sierra Leone, I think can win the Kentucky Derby. So I'm very excited to catch up with Tyler, talk a little bit about his past growing up around the racetrack and some of his favorite horses and his mentors and some of his experiences throughout his career. And obviously the highlight of his career, which is getting his Eclipse Award for jockey apprentice. From me. I'm just kidding about that. You know what? Funny story about that. I'll tell you before we get to Tyler. That was around that Steve Harvey thing when he did that, when he like made the mistake giving the trophy. I was like thinking in my head when I was presenting that I was going to kind of do a Steve Harvey bit, but I was on the fence about, is it going to be funny or is it going to be corny? Thank goodness someone did it before me and it didn't go that great. And then I didn't have to do it and embarrass myself. So I can't remember who did it, but if you did do that for me, I appreciate it. Thank you so much. All right, let's get to Tyler and his upcoming exciting mount on likely to be the second choice, second choice, Sierra Leone. Tyler Gaffalione.
What's up, JK? How you doing, man?
I'm good, buddy. I'm good. How about you? You getting excited?
Yeah, man. It's all becoming pretty real.
This will be the shortest price horse you've been on in the Derby, right?
Most definitely.
Yeah, that's exciting.
Yeah, you know, and he's the real deal. I'm so excited for this.
What? Tell me about Davey Florida. You know, as we rewind a little bit for a guy who's going to be riding his shortest price, you know, Derby horse in his career, in his young career. Tell me a little bit about Davey Florida.
It's a great place to grow up. You know, it's a kind of more of a horse country. It's similar to Ocala, but on a much smaller scale. But they used to have hitching posts. Like, you used to be able to ride your horses around town. You could go into stores. It's a cool little town, very old school, very vintage. But everybody's friendly. Like I said, great area to grow up.
When was the last time you went back?
I actually go there quite frequently, basically every winter. I still have family that lives over there, so it's not too far from the racetrack. It's about 30-40 minutes west of Gulfstream Park.
Okay. They got like a big billboard of you when you pull into Davie. Are you the most famous person from Davie, Florida?
Not even close.
I bet you if you get the job done next week, they'll put a poster up of you.
I wouldn't mind, but yeah, it's you definitely got to check out if you ever get down there. Really good food, some good old school spots. Yeah, it's a cool place.
Do you? I'm sure you do. Who was your first Derby? Who'd you ride in your first Derby?
My first Derby was on Patch. I think it was 2017, but rode Patch for Calumet and Todd Pletcher.
Did you was part of your game plan the fact that he didn't have, was it his left eye or right eye?
It was his right eye.
Right eye. Did you have a plan for that? Were you thinking about it? Was it something that Todd talked to you about? Hey, let's make sure we you know, don't bury him on the inside.
You know, actually, I got familiar with him the race before. I got to ride him in the Louisiana Derby, and we actually rode the rail the whole way around there. He jumped up and ran second that day, but in the Derby, it was a completely different circumstance. He drew the 20 hole that day, so really weren't many two options. Really just try and get down to that first turn cleanly without losing too much ground, and he broke good, put me in a good spot. It was an incredible experience, and unfortunately, he didn't run the greatest for us that day, but like I said, it was a dream come true just to even ride it.
I mean, look, I know this is kind of a dumb question. Obviously, it's significantly different, but is the Derby feel that much different when the gates open from what you're doing on a daily basis? I mean, I'm sure obviously the lead up is significantly different, but when the gates open, how much different is it from what you do every day?
You know, like you said, the buildup's more of it than anything. Once the gates open, it becomes another race. Obviously, it's a little bit larger field. Having to navigate through that is a little different, but it's the same approach. I just have to ride the race as it comes.
What's your memory about War of Will? Obviously, that was a pretty interesting situation for you. What was your memory of his run in the Derby?
I'll be honest, the first half a mile wasn't the most comfortable. He was really pulling on me that day, the mud splashing up on him. First time he'd been hit with dirt in the face, and he'd always had a tendency to be aggressive, but that day he just did not want to relax. And we finally got to the far turn, and a spot opened up for me to move outside of maximum security, and I needed a spot at that point. So it opened up perfectly for us, and I kind of just slid right in there, and I gave him his head, and he moved forward. And if you've ever ridden a race, you know, when you give them their head and they go forward at that point of the race, especially in the Derby, you just popped out to the two path. Now you're in second. It was an amazing feeling. And for a moment, I thought I had a chance. And yeah, and then everything kind of happened and it all fell apart. But he was such an athlete. He protected us that day. It was incredible going back, looking at everything and to see how truly amazing it was that nothing happened.
And, you know, look, it's nothing we want to think about or talk about, but you know, you've obviously gone down before. So you've experienced that. Did you think that in that moment, did you think, oh shit, I'm going, I mean, were you surprised that you didn't go down?
More than anything? Yes. I was actually surprised I didn't. After watching the replay, it was just, I was that close to him. He didn't really have a chance to hit heels. They were just kind of knocking legs at that point. But yeah, I was just kind of waiting for it to go.
And then, I mean, I'm trying to remember what was the inquiry like for you? Cause you ended up at the back, right? Or I mean, you didn't after that.
I wound up finishing, it was either sixth or seventh, but I didn't claim foul that day just because it wasn't going to improve my horse's position, what one place, and there's no outcome for that. I didn't want to take a Derby away from somebody for that, you know?
Right. Yeah. That's all. I've always found that to be tricky, you know, and I would imagine that look, I mean, we're all human, right? So I just would imagine that just a slippery slope for you in terms of like claiming foul and you know, you have a duty to your owners and your trainer that you're riding for. But then at the same time, like, you know, you have your personal feelings of like, didn't make a difference anyways. I was empty. And then you get put in a position where you might have to claim foul against someone else that you ride for when you were empty, because you got to do what you got to do for your, I'd imagine that's a tricky part of the game you guys have to play.
It definitely can be, you know, it's one of the things you have to be conscious of, but the way I've always looked at it, if it can better the outcome for my owners, myself, the horse, and the trainer, then obviously it's the right thing to do. But in a case like that, you finish sixth or seventh in the Derby, you move up one position, there's no change. There's no money difference. There's no, you still didn't hit the board in the Derby. It's not going to change anything for us. What happened, and we move forward.
What's the logistics on that? I mean, I think I know what it is. When you need to claim foul, would you tell the outrider on the gallop out?
Sometimes you'll holler to him. In a race like the Derby, so much going on, you definitely have to get their attention at first. But after you pull up, you ride over to them and just say, call the stewards and hold the race.
Okay. And then they just call over and that's how it goes down. And then how do you, if someone objects against you, do you find out on the backside or do you not find out until you get to the winner's circle?
It just depends. Like, sometimes you pull up near the outrider and you hear the rider tell him claim foul on such and such. And yeah, you have an idea of what's going on.
Do you guys yell at each other? Like, say Jose like claims foul on you, but it was frivolous and you hear him. You're like, hey, shut up, Jose. You were empty. Do you guys have those conversations back there?
I mean, they do happen, but not as often as you would think. I mean, everybody's understanding. We're all trying to win, you know?
Yeah. So fast forward a couple weeks and then you get your first classic win with War of Will and the Preakness. What was that experience like?
Oh, it was incredible. The build up to that was a lot different than anything I had been used to. After all the controversy in the Derby, there was a lot of comments made about my ride, and a lot of the blame was put on me, saying that I ran into the horse and all kinds of things. So being young and never being in that position, it did bother me, but I was fortunate to have my dad and my family around me. My agent was a huge support, but we just kind of focused on moving forward off of that and focusing on the Preakness. My dad and I spoke about the race numerous times leading up to it, even the morning of. We even reached out to Jerry Bailey to kind of get some insight, just to pick his brain. And yeah, everything just kind of fell into place that day, and Spot opened up at the top of the lane and he shot right through. And I just remember the last 16th, I knew I was going to win, and it was all starting to sink in. And it was the most surreal moment I could ever imagine. Just looking back on it, it's hard to even put into words. Just full of excitement.
So look, winning a Preakness is pretty damn cool. And especially growing up around racing, I'd imagine that you've watched a lot of Preaknesses. There's no question or doubt about the importance of the Preakness in a Triple Crown race. But compare the feelings of winning the Preakness and then the feeling of winning 7 races in one day. I mean, that's got to be pretty damn surreal as well.
It just didn't seem real. Everything is one of those days where I thought I was on some live horses. I think it was a 4th of July card, and we had some live chances and stakes later on, but the day started off good. I think I won the first 2. I got beat a nose in the 3rd. And then I think we won 3 more in a row and got beat another nose. And I think I wound up winning 1 more after that. And I think I finished 2nd in the last 2. So it was an incredible day. Everything just, they just showed up. I don't think it had anything to do with me. Just, I was lucky enough to be in that position. It was crazy to think back on, though.
That's insane. I mean, I couldn't pick 7 winners in a day that I didn't even have to ride them.
Some days we don't even get to ride 7 horses. It's crazy.
That's wild. That's wild. So tell me kind of about did you know your whole life? I mean, it says, I think you got your first horse when you were 4. I mean, at that point, did you know you were going to be a jockey? When did you really? I mean, I know you did some other animal activities. I think you were bull riding or something. When did you know you wanted to be a jockey?
I think I always wanted to be a jockey. I remember always loving the idea of it. But I think when it really sank in was probably 2003. Huge fan of Jose Santos, Funny Side, that whole story. Obviously, growing up, I idolized Jerry Bailey, and he wrote Empire Maker. He was a favorite leading up to the Triple Crown that year. So just a battle between those two. And I remember riding my bike up and down the driveway. I used to pick up like little branches and pretend I was riding either one of those horses and riding in those races. So I would say probably around that time, I think I knew what I was going to do.
So what was the journey, for the journey, all the way up until your first, your first mount, your first win? What was, between, the time you just described of deciding you wanted to do it until you actually did do it? What did that look like?
I personally, I think I had the best childhood. I was so fortunate, the surroundings that we had. Spent most of my time in Davie, Florida, growing up, which is a lot of farm area. But my dad wound up moving up to Ocala, right around that time, maybe 2003, 2004, and we lived on a farm, had access to numerous racetracks around us. So even after training hours in the morning, my dad didn't let me get on horses right away. So first, obviously, he started off cleaning stalls, taking care of a couple horses, feeding in the mornings. We were getting up usually around 2, 3 in the morning, be at the barn 3:30, 4, and he'd get on horses all morning, train our own, then he'd go gallop. I'd ride around with him all morning, walk back and forth with him to the track. It's just, I loved being around. I love being out in the mornings, everything about it. Just it's a different feel when you're out there. But being a kid, it was the greatest thing in the world. Being around all the horses, getting to watch all the action. And we did that for a couple years until my dad started letting me get on the pony. I started ponying with him back and forth to the track. And eventually, he started letting me gallop. I think I galloped my first horse when I was 11. And yeah, didn't really slow down from there. Started working the sales. Did that for 2 or 3 years and just galloped in between during summers when I was in high school. And after I graduated, took a little bit more time just to make sure I was fit and make sure I was ready to ride. And eventually started when I was 19.
What was that first leg up you got to gallop? Were you nervous, or were you just so excited that the nerves couldn't have gotten a hold of you?
Oh, I was too excited, man. Nothing was getting in my way. That moment had been building up for years.
I can only imagine. It just seems like such a thrilling experience. You know, to be on something so fast and powerful, and I can only imagine, especially if it's like kind of like a lifelong dream to kind of start to pursue that career.
That's the thing, you know. And it's not only just the power and the strength, it's just the horse in general. I mean, they're incredible animals. They're so smart. So many different personalities. It's cool to get to know them.
You know, obviously you have your war of wills and you've got your Got Stormies, but what are some of the ones that like really stand out to you? Some of the horses that you've ridden throughout your career that kind of hold a special place?
There was a couple horses early in my career. There was one, Dr. J Dub. I started riding him for Carlo Vacareza, and he wound up climbing the claiming ranks, and he wound up winning a stake. I think it was on Pegasus Day. It was the Bob Humphreys turf, but it was pretty early in my career, so it was a pretty special horse to me. And then one that I think I still had the bug at the time. I was terrible on the turf. I had horrible numbers. I think I was like 4 or 5% during the winter meet. Didn't really change much during the spring after everybody left. So I was struggling quite a bit on the turf, and I was trying to get advice from everyone I could, and just really wasn't working out. But I picked up this horse named Concert Stage for Gustavo Delgado. He's a starter, 16 horse on the grass long. He'd won a couple races, old knocker, old hard knocker. But this horse taught me everything. he was so cool. I think we wound up winning 8 races together. He just gave me the confidence, taught me how to ride the turf, taught me patience. He was really big for me in my career.
When you say he taught you patience, what do you mean by that? Like he was a horse that rewarded you for being patient, so it gave you the confidence to do it. Is that how that works?
Essentially, yes. Being a young rider, I was always very forward in races, using my apprentice allowance weight to my advantage. But he was a horse that wanted to come from behind, and if you moved too early, he'd lack the kick, or he'd get to lead and stop. So you really had to time it right and just trust him.
Do you think that's, you know, you mentioned that you had that spell where you were 4 or 5% on the grass. Was it, do you, is that what you blame it mostly on, was just a lack of patience? Or what else did you kind of learn and pick up that helped you become a better grass rider?
I definitely lacked in patience. I didn't understand the importance of saving ground as much. Timing, it's the grass is just a whole different feel. It's a completely different race. It's just the approach, the tactics, everything about it is completely different from the dirt. So you just have to take a different approach, and yeah.
If you're gonna ride in a if you ride one shot $10 million race, would you rather be on the dirt or the turf?
Personally, I'd pick the turf.
Wow, that's funny for someone who struggled at the beginning to now have that comfort level with it. That's pretty cool. Yeah,
I love it, man. It's challenging, but it's rewarding.
How's my boy Carl Spackler?
Ah, man. What a horse. I'm excited for him. He's coming back on actually my wife's birthday. He's going to run on Thurby.
Oh, wow. I mean, Bob's going to be fired up. He texted me the other day and said he was coming. He said he was coming to Derby. So he'll be fired up for old Carl. That's exciting. That's exciting.
Yeah, it should be a fun week.
He had a hell of a little summer. Yeah.
Say that again.
I was saying that Carl Spackler had a hell of a little summer.
Oh, yes, he did. He really blossomed there late summer or going into the fall.
Because you and Cassie are in Louisville, basically. You're Louisville, Florida, and then Saratoga in the summer, right?
Correct.
Yeah, that'll be fun. Get old Bobby E in town. Walking around downtown with no shoes on, I'm sure.
He's gotten a little better. He wears them when he needs to.
Oh my God, he cracks me up. I love to tell people what I'm like telling people about. Well, I use the story in two ways. We're obviously if people who are listening that you don't know, I'm talking about Bob Edwards, who's Tyler's father-in-law, Bob Edwards at E5 Racing. And I always tell, when I'm telling people the stories about who Bob is, I say, Bob's this guy that will show up to the VIP lounge at the Phasic Tipton sale where people are buying millions and millions and millions of dollars of horses and have on tuxedos, and he'll wear shorts, a hoodie, and no shoes. That is Bob Edwards.
Camo shorts and the hoodie. Spot on, man.
Oh my God, he's the best.
The best is a couple years back, we went somewhere. He wanted to go have a drink after. Bob's into his cigars, and he likes his whiskey with his cigar. So we went to have a drink after some dinner or something. And he was convinced that he wasn't wearing shoes in this place. So we roll up. At first, they let him in. All good. About 20 minutes later, come on, man. You got to go put on shoes. He refused. So we wound up leaving.
Oh, my God.
Shoes.
He's a wild fellow. Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing him. I know he's excited. The family's excited for next weekend for you. Is he going to work this weekend? Have you been working him, or he's going to have his normal exercise rider?
I haven't heard much other than a routine workout for him. Chad hasn't said much to me.
Yeah,
but they got a good thing going over there.
I feel you. Yeah, whatever. You don't mess anything up now. Whatever needs to happen. Do you have a preference on where you want to draw? Are we rooting for it? Are we rooting for you to draw somewhere?
To be honest, no. I think he's pretty versatile. For the first time, I don't think the draw is as important.
Yeah, I mean, he's not going to be on the front end, and he's not going to fall way out the back. So just, you know, pop away from there, find your position. What, I know Chad has kind of expressed some comfort that, you know, the antics of the gate seem to be an isolated situation. You know, sitting on his back, do you feel pretty comfortable that you'll be able to navigate that part of the situation this time around?
Yeah, most definitely, man. I truly think last time he just got a little worked up because of the crowd being right there. And he was the last horse loading. And if you've ever been to Keeneland going a mile and an eighth, you break right in front of the winner's circle. And it's the last race of the day. Everybody comes up to the rail. It's packed house. And he's the last horse going in. They're all getting excited for the race to start. I think that was really most of it. Because the time before in the Risen Star, he hesitated when he walked up, but then he went right in. So I really don't see it being an issue. And he's in good hands. Chad's going to do plenty of schooling with him. It's a good crew over there at Churchill. They'll work with him.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like those types of situations are like, it's not like he's a habitual, you know, gate jerk, right? It's like, it, you know, those are the ones you got to worry about. But the one-offs, I mean, they're still young horses. They're still figuring it out. And so the you know, the fact that maybe he had one little instance where he, you know, he's being a little bit tricky, I don't think that's a necessarily an indicator of what's to come.
No, and the thing that I took away from it that I loved about him is a horse to kind of throw a fit like that for a couple minutes behind the gate before the bluegrass and then is able to recompose himself and run that kind of race. It just shows what kind of mindset he has.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I mean, you'd think that he could have, you know, ran his race back there behind the gate and to show the ability. I mean, he just really levels off. It feels like at the end of his races, which has got to be kind of exciting thinking about the mile and a quarter.
Oh, most definitely. And I've said it before, but I don't think we've gotten to the bottom of him yet.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. That's pretty cool. How many Churchill titles have you won? A lot.
I've been fortunate. I've won quite a few there. I'd say probably around 11 or 12.
That's a lot. That's a lot for at the home of the Kentucky Derby. Tell me a little bit about your apprentice year that obviously ended with one of the greatest moments of your life, which was me giving you the trophy of the Eclipse Award. But tell me a little bit about that apprentice year.
And just so you know, you handing it over was just made it that much more special. No, but you know, I look back and it was such a fun time. You know, I was young, learning the business, being out on my own for the first time. It was all exciting, all new, and I'm living my dream. You know, it was incredible. My agent at the time was Walter Blum, and if you've met Walter, he's a fun guy to be around, very energetic, very outgoing, and it was perfect for me at that time. I was young, very immature, very quiet kid, shy, so I needed somebody like that to help me get out of my shell, and it was a perfect fit. Walter did a great job. He did put me on numerous winners for everybody that was down here at the time, and it was just a lot of fun. We were riding in Florida, sunshine, good racing. I developed a couple good connections with Ralph Nix, Dave Fox, guys like that. And, you know, we got lucky. Everything really happened for us. Struggled during the winter meet, like I had said previously, but once everybody left, it opened up some doors, and we got lucky at the right time for the right people and just kind of built on that.
How much does the title, when you're young and getting started, how much does the title champion apprentice help your agent getting you mounts? Does it help, or is it, you know, it's a nice thing to be honored with, but it doesn't necessarily move the needle. It's more about, you know, how these trainers actually feel about your abilities.
I would have to say a little bit of both. You know, it definitely doesn't hurt you, but it doesn't matter what you win or what awards or how many races you've won. You still got to go out and produce that day for that person. So you're only as good as your last ride.
Kentucky Oaks. You went ahead and checked that one off your list. Tell me a little bit about her. Her name throws me off because I always want to say pretty mischievous, but I don't know if it's pretty. I think it's pretty mischievous. I don't know. I think they both should work, right?
I always thought so. I said it wrong for like the first 4 or 5 months that I was around her. But man, I got to give Brendan all the credit. He called it from the beginning. He's told me twice since we've been working together for the last 7 years. He told me twice about two horses before they ever ran, and he's told me he had to come get on these. The first one was Maxfield. Unfortunately, it didn't work out. I was in Canada the day that he ran, and Jose wound up
keeping them out that with him. But he told me about this filly sometime, I would say probably around July last year or 2 years ago, and said she could be anything. I worked her a couple of times, really liked her, got to ride her first couple starts. She was very impressive, but she always had a tendency to wait on horses. She never really finished off her runs. And you could always tell there was more there, but she was just kind of playing around. And I also was riding at the time a filly, Wonder Wheel. She wound up winning the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Fillies. She was champion two-year-old, so I had both of them going into their three-year-old years. And Wonder Wheel just, she never really came back to her full strength. She ran into Suncoast and just never really got back to where she was her two-year-old year. But fortunate enough, Pretty Mischievous stepped up, and I think we wound up winning the Rachel Alexander with her. And I was in Dubai when she ran in the Fairground Oaks, I believe it was. But Brennan, being the loyal man that he is and a great trainer, gave me the opportunity back. And, you know, everything just fell into place in the Oaks. Drew the 14 hole, but it was actually perfect for her because she's a big, strong filly. And she needs a target in front of her. So we thought the setup would work out, and it did.
And then is she La Troyenne-ing this weekend or next weekend?
That's the plan. She's either going to work Friday or Saturday, and we're going there.
Well, that's nice. That was your first grade one, right? Was Salty the La Troyenne?
Yes, it was.
Look at, there you go. That's nice. I love that race. The Derby undercard, like Belmont undercard, Whitney undercard, Travers undercard, those are all great. But like, I love Derby undercard has really some fun races, right? Like the La Troyenne, like you get to see some of those good mares that stuck around, come back. And, that should be a fun way to get to kick it off. They usually run that on Friday usually, don't they?
Yes. That's usually on Oaks Day. Usually one or two races before the Oaks.
That's exciting. And then when you missed her Fairgrounds Oaks, was that Gunite that you were riding in Dubai?
That was correct.
That's a cool horse.
I miss him, man. He was so cool. One of my favorite horses I've ever rode.
I know that. And one of the reasons, I don't know if you remember this, when we did Cart Talk, after we were done filming it, you were just like, which I think is wonderful that you are open to hear what people think. I think it's, you know, your willingness to learn and to hear whether you agree or not, I think it goes a long way for the rider that you are, the rider you've become, and the rider you'll continue to be. But I remember you asked me, you're like, hey, what do you think about the Vanderbilt? You know, do you think I did? I was like, nah, look like you just had to ride the horse the entire time. I don't know if it was the track or the kickback. I thought you ran really well. And I really think you'll beat the Elite Power in the forego. And then you made us both look smart.
Yeah, he showed up for us that day. But you know, no matter what you do, you get beat a nose. You could have rode the perfect race. You're still going to think there's something I could have done to make that up. It's, what, 2-3 inches? Somewhere in the race you can find that. And, you know, I beat myself up a lot, but that's the thing. I want to get better. I want to be the best that I can be, and I don't want to settle for less, you know?
Tyler, who are some of the, you know, I wasn't fully paying attention back in the day with like the generation of riders, you know, kind of the ones before Johnny and Mike Smith. And so those are kind of my, you know, those are my kind of my OGs. And I would imagine they're very kind of your OGs as well. But you guys have, you know, just this unbelievably talented group at the moment, right? With you and Flavian and the Ortiz brothers and Louie and Joel and Ricky. And it's just this kind of who's who of unbelievable riders. And as a horse player, there's a lot of guys that I'm very fortunate, especially at Saratoga and in the places that you ride. I look down and I don't even necessarily pay attention to who the rider is, because I just know I got someone who's good. So I can just look at the horse as an individual. Who old school guys do you really look up to? And then who's one of your peers that you really, really admire and look up to, even though you guys are peers and you're competing and banging heads with each other? Who are those two guys for you?
Older, I would have to say probably Lafitte. I can never imitate Lafitte. He was so unique in so many ways, but I loved everything about him. His drive, his competitiveness, his everything. I'm sure you've seen the Lafitte documentary on him, but if you watch it, you just understand his passion, his dedication to his craft and his career, and you have to admire that. And to know how hard he fought his weight, and he rode with so much strength, I can imagine how he felt, but I just really admire him and his attitude and his dedication to the sport. But nowadays, I mean, you could take your pick. I grew up idolizing most of these guys. Been fortunate to compete against them, but I would say probably Mike Smith nowadays. And he's just an incredible individual. I called him for the first time, I think for my 14th birthday, after he won on Giacomo, and he was so kind. He signed the win picture, sent it to me, talked to me for months on the phone after that, and we developed a relationship, and it was funny. I would sit there and talk to him for hours on the phone, but we finally met in person when I started riding, came to Gulfstream. I maybe said one or two words. He still messes with me about that, but now that I've gotten older, really able to open up and talk to him. He reaches out all the time. Last year, I got to go to Saudi. I traveled to Saudi with him, so it was a fun trip. Got to hang out with him and Jimmy Barnes in the airport. Heard some incredible stories, but yeah, he's a great ambassador for our sport, great role model, and incredible rider.
It's funny you mentioned Mike Smith, because like I was a huge fan first before I started getting to do this cool stuff with, you know, the podcast and the TV and all that stuff. I was just a fan. Like, and my Twitter profile for the longest time was a picture of me absolutely ecstatic, pointing to a picture pointing to my tattoo of Zenyatta, but showing Mike Smith at Churchill. And I was like, Mike, look, I have a picture of Zenyatta. And I took a picture of it and took a picture with him. And like, that was my thing. And then I went to this auction, this like charity auction, and bought a picture of like Mike Smith, just like this huge picture of his face. It was almost a joke, but I was kind of serious. And then once I actually met Mike, I was so starstruck, to see him and to hang out with him and to like, and just to like, he's the nicest guy. He's hilarious. His stories are outstanding, but I know exactly what you're talking about. Like I, you know, for different reasons, right? Like I didn't want to be a rider, but I still had that kind of that idolized, you know, I idolized him to a certain extent, and then to actually be able to hang out with him, spend time with him. He's tremendous.
He's the best. Yeah. I don't think I'll ever meet anyone else like him.
Yeah, he just rode all my favorite horses, like that I
mine could, too. That was the thing. Like growing up, Holy Bull, Inside Information. I mean, the list goes on, but God, you got to skip away. I mean, come on.
Yeah, it's outstanding. So that's a lot of fun. Well, Tyler, look, I know it's a busy week for you and you got a lot going on. I appreciate you taking the time. I wanted just to hear your voice a little bit before we got into a big week, and we'll be rooting like hell for you, and safe trips around there and all the races, but especially the big one.
Thanks so much, JK. Thanks for having me on, man.
No problem. Talk soon.
Take care.
TG, I appreciate you, brother. Safe trips around there. Good to talk to you. Rooting for Tyler, you know, it's exciting. You got to think about this. You know, it's whatever career you're in, whatever profession, whatever your passion is, there's that one thing that is that kind of like, oh, damn moment that you can have. You know, I would imagine if you're an actor, it's winning an Oscar. You know, if you're a baseball player, it's, you know, winning the World Series or whatever. I think that if you're a, you know, whatever it is that you do, there's that pinnacle. And I think that the Kentucky Derby is that for riders. And, you know, it's one of those things that you feel like you need to have to complete your legacy, to complete your career. And so every time you have a chance, it's I can imagine it's a pretty exciting, nerve-wracking moment. And there's nothing better than to have a chance on an extremely live horse. Many would argue is could be the favorite or likely to be the second choice, seeing what they do with Fierceness. But you got to think that Tyler's pretty excited about that. I appreciate him taking the time a week out from a very special day like that. I want to thank our friends at Qatar Racing, and I'm sure they're going to throw a lot of stuff at us come Derby and Oaks weekend, but none more important than Just a Touch. They're Justify Colt, who will be running in the Kentucky Derby in that that claret and gold, maroon and gold, but Sheikh Fahad reminded me that it's claret and gold, so we'll go with that. So I want to wish our friends at Qatar Racing the best luck in the Kentucky Derby and every race they show up. I want to thank Tyler for taking the time. I want to thank PTF. I want to thank all the people at In the Money Media. If you haven't noticed, we're posting a lot of stuff on YouTube. So make sure you go to the YouTube page and subscribe. There's a lot of really cool stuff on there. Speaking of Just a Touch, we have Chris Felica, the Bear, famously from College Game Day, now on Fox Sports. We have him talking about Just a Touch on those monster pods. We also had Brad Cox talking about Encino, Catching Freedom, and Just a Touch. And then we had Gabby Gaudette talking about Tyler Gaffalione and Sierra Leone. Tyler Gaffalione, Sierra Leone. Wow. It's poetry. We'll see you guys next week.
I need to know everything, who and the what and the where, I need everything. Trust me, I hear what you're saying, but I like it's new what you're telling me. I'm curious, George, I hop in the Porsche, five on a horse, I'm ready for war, I'm coming for throws to turn to a ghost, I need to know everything. Now you'll be surprised at the info you get is by letting them talk, so I'm letting them talk. Gotta keep quiet, maneuver and signs to let them in.